And that's the kicky music that means it's time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And I'm here around the table with the current version, of the Pop Culture Happy Hour staff. As you were upgraded last week. Glenn Weldon, what do you do here at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And Trey Graham, what do you do here at NPR?
I am the movies editor at NPR.org.
And, you're not Stephen Thompson at all.
No, my hair is much longer.
That's true. Unfortunately,
but not quite as
much longer.
That's
it.
Good point.
Stephen Thompson has been detained by the authorities. That's not true. But for our purposes, it is, because he's not with us today. But we're, of course, sad about that in an obligatory kind of way. In a completely non-obligatory kind of way, we're incredibly excited to welcome back our first sub we ever had here on the show. Miss Barry Hardiman.
Hey!
Yay! Welcome back, Barry.
Thank you. And what do you do for NPR, Barry Hardiman?
Well, when I'm not busy reproducing, as I just did.
Wait a minute.
That came out weird.
No, it didn't. No, it's perfect.
I am an editor at Talk of the Nation, which is NPR's midday talk show.
Barry.
Linda, actually, before we go any further, I do have a little piece of paperwork. I probably should have done this before we started taping, but I was talking to our union rep, Dave. Remember Dave from Podcasters Local 51?
Yes.
And apparently we've been flouting one of the bylaws in the charter for a long time, for almost a year now, which has to do with substitute panelists. There's just some paperwork we have to fill out very quickly. It's just two questions. And, dot the I, cross
the T. Doesn't involve a beard, does it?
Yeah.
Just kidding.
No, it doesn't. So just real quick, this is form ST for replacing Stephen Thompson. Question one, do you have adorable children?
Yes, I have one adorable child. Sorry, I yelled that so loudly because he's that adorable.
Oh, that's good to know. Okay.
Yeah, he's real cute.
Okay. Are you prepared to talk about that on the show?
Yes.
Perfectly good. Yes, finally, last question. See, quick like a bunny, we're getting through this. Yeah. Do you read books?
It is, in fact, the only thing I did while said small parasite child feeding and other things. It is pretty much the only thing I did.
Okay, well,
besides Regis and Kelly, but we'll get to that later.
See, that actually makes, that qualifies you to replace Stephen Thompson.
Okay, good.
So we have verified that Barry shares some things, but not all things.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
With Stephen Thompson.
Hair and Regis.
So, Barry, we have not had you on the show since sometime in the fall, and you have returned to the office as of today. Is that correct?
Today is my first day back.
Today is your first day back.
Today is, may I just say, my first day out of jammies. 4 months, truly.
Lucky us.
I enjoyed some of your stories about wondering whether the UPS man would recognize you.
It's true. I mean, the first time I came, like, with a shirt on, he was really, really excited about it.
Of course.
Sorry, ladies.
Yeah, you think he was excited that you had the shirt on?
Right. No, that's true. He looked a little crestfallen.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. So while you were gone, we had a show about your baby.
I know! It was my favorite show!
We had a show about how much we love your baby.
He's such a great baby.
So what's he enjoying?
He doesn't read much.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's he enjoying these days? What's he into?
Well, he really likes a hand waving in his face and then waving in his face in another place. He's really where he's at. He's also into the colors red, yellow, orange, purple. Bright colors, really.
Mm-hmm.
He likes that. He enjoys milk.
I'm assuming that he is a fan of, say, barfing.
He is the spittiest baby on the planet. In fact, he really is, actually. It's truly incredible. I don't know how all that stuff got in him.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I think he's secretly hitting the bottle elsewhere, you know, which would be really awkward.
There's some great Facebook photos of various puking incidents.
Yeah. You should mention that in the school applications. AP level barfing.
Yep. That's
totally advanced.
Mm-hmm. Well, since we have the pleasure of having you back after your hiatus, we thought we would start off with a little discussion about something that we thought you might know something about, which is what kinds of pop culture you take in, either only when or especially when you are spending a lot of unstructured time at home. Which is not to say, of course, I mean, obviously, with please do not misunderstand me, world, I'm not saying you wouldn't be busy. I understand you're all very, very busy with the babies.
One wishes the baby came out structured. This is a real problem with Mother Nature.
That's what I'm saying, unstructured, right?
Yeah.
Not free time. I understand how busy you are. Don't call me. But we thought that we would chat about sort of what comes into your life when you're homebound. Even homebound with love, as we say.
Homebound
with love.
Bound
with love.
I think I rented that movie.
Bound by love to your home.
Right.
So talk to us a little bit about what's been entertaining you while you've been gone.
Well, the whole thing of the sleep while the baby sleeps, it really wasn't. While the baby sleeps, you are to be enjoying all of that daytime TV, which you did not know existed.
Yes.
And, you know, I mean, there's a channel called Oxygen. I mean, it is truly amazing. So I've delved back into General Hospital a little bit. For those of you that are GH fans, Brenda is back on. Why did nobody tell me this?
I know. I've been hearing off and on that she is back, but I've not seen her since she's been back.
I mean, really, it's great. And I actually highly recommend reading the Wikipedia. I had to catch up entry on Brenda Corinthos, because there's literally a line where that says, "Then Brenda told Jax the horrible truth." At which point I realized, well, this is the best show ever. Like, yeah. Why am I wasting my time with movies?
Yeah.
They're so short.
Or reading.
I know.
Well, the best part of this, and I don't think Barry will mind my telling this story, but the funniest thing to me about this is that one of the things that Barry and I discussed before the baby showed up
exactly.
was
they
the,
ripped him out of me screaming
was the concern
front ways.
over whether you would have enough time to read books.
And yes.
And did you find that you have time to
read
books?
Well, here is the great thing about technologically things. Technology.
Sure.
I do know what it is. Sorry.
Sure.
Is that the Kindle enables you to sit in a screaming child's nursery and read every book of the Game of Thrones series.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great because the first book, as anyone here who has also read, well, you'll notice, I mean, there's like literally infanticide. So you can be like, you know you are a good mother sitting in the child's room, but you can kind of get out this, you know, because you know, there are all these terrible stories about, you know, babies don't do well in these books. So I read every Game of Thrones that there is.
That's awesome.
She just stole my answer to this question.
Oh, no.
Darn it.
That's why you were making
I'm
those
so
alarm
sorry.
Sounds.
It's true. That's, yes.
I'm so
but
glad.
I also reread a lot of, I'm going to steal another one of your answers from Ghosts of Pop Culture Happy Hour
sure.
Past. V.C. Andrews. I read a ton of V.C. Andrews. Mm-hmm. I read all of the Jean Platey Queens of Stuarts and Tudors. And I mean, there's not a queen whose skirts I have not,
that's fun.
You know, held onto, seen under, et cetera.
Except for Trey Graham.
That's true. Well, I'm sidling up.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
To the degree that anyone might be tempted to tell people who are about to have babies, you'll never have time to read a book again.
Oh, you will.
We do not feel, I think, as we discussed prior to when the baby came.
Right.
And as you feel now.
Right.
This is not something you necessarily need to assume is the case.
No, you do not. And not only that, you can look forward to, I mean, you know. You may never put on eye makeup again. I can barely see anybody here. But I didn't realize there was a connection between those two things, but there is. But, you know, you are going to read again. And you will also get the pleasure of, you know, Regis, Kathy Lee.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Hoda.
Right. Oh, Kathy Lee and Hoda.
Kathy Lee and Hoda.
God, it was fabulous. It was like Hank had a morning nap. I got to have a morning tipple with Kathy Lee and Hoda. Then he had a lunchtime nap, and I had a lunchtime beer with Oprah. It was great. It was great. I wonder why that baby weight's still hanging around.
Yeah, so... So you've used this time to discover fine television like
fine television
General types. Hospital,
mm-hmm.
Kathy Lee and Hoda,
mm-hmm.
which I completely support, by the way.
Oh, please.
And, as I recall, The View.
The View.
The View.
The View. It is like, when I say watching an accident, I don't actually mean that in a bad way. I mean, you never know
right.
what terrible thing is going to come out of someone's mouth, and that then they are going to have to run and clean up like every 5 seconds
right.
later. I mean,
right,
it's
right,
constantly
right.
like, thank God they don't have a dump button. Mm-hmm.
Who's your favorite? Who's your favorite on The View?
I really love Whoopi. I really do. I love Whoopi, but I have to say I'm kind of a Joy fan.
Joy fan. Mm-hmm. I understand that. Given that environment, I can understand how
yeah.
I mean,
you
would come to appreciate
also,
Joy.
She's got that kind of a... Oh, God, who's the Real Housewife? She's got that kind of Jill Sarin sensibility
yes,
about
does.
Her.
She does.
That I'm kind of like, yeah, these are my people.
She does.
Let's get some rugs and tell them what's up.
She
you know?
does.
Like, I kind of like that about her.
She does have a little bit of the Jill Sarin about her. Have you been watching The Real Housewives?
I've been, there's not a housewife who's, yeah. I mean, please.
They're yeah.
Joyzy. They're
so
Joyce
you watched. So you watched the New York Housewives go to Morocco. Yeah, it was pretty wild.
But can we count on you to take over the A-list watching responsibility? For me, please.
The A-list. Sorry.
The A-list New York. It's the gay Real Housewives show.
Yes, there's something gayer than the Real Housewives.
So awful. You have no idea. It's so bad.
How am I not watching this thing? Mm.
It's not on right now.
Self preservation.
No, it's not as joyful as the Real Housewives of New York City.
Oh.
So you didn't find yourself dipping back into, say, The Price is Right and learning how much Mop and Glow costs.
You know what? No,
vitamins.
Yeah, I didn't want to be
mysteriously expensive.
Yeah, no. The game show's not for me. Although I really loved The Voice. I really did. I mean, I know that this is, but I mean, there's still some hormones brewing in here. I was like crying every time, you know, like every time a chair turned around. It was like, oh, somebody loves him like I love my baby. It's terrible. So, you know.
So how you are with your baby is like how Christina Aguilera is with one
Bev.
Of her contestants.
Yeah,
Bev.
I mean, that's like, who is also bald like my baby. So,
yeah.
You know.
It's, I saw like,
I'm constantly turning my chair around.
I missed the development with Christina Aguilera?
Bev is.
Oh, sorry.
Bev is bald.
Oh, Bev okay. was Christina's sort of chosen contestant.
Right.
And, and one of the people, one of the standard bearers, I would say, for the fact that that show actually had some different humans than you would see on Idol.
It really, really did. I mean, yeah. You know, sorry, I actually feel really passionately about Christina Aguilera's choices. And also, I also loved it. It was just great to tune in every week to see, like, how many more false eyelashes she could get on. She was still Christina Aguilera, but she was just exuding, like, good stuff.
That's awesome.
Know? Yeah.
That's awesome.
No, I highly recommend.
All right.
Sorry.
Trey Graham.
I, like Barry, am prone to overreading. I, too, went through the entire four books of Game of Thrones, and I do like to disappear into a sort of fictional world for a while, especially when I've got lots of time. I am also a fan of regrettable television when I'm laid low with the plague, but I tend more toward regrettable sitcoms on Hulu and Netflix. Rather than regrettable daytime television.
Sure.
I am not a fan of game shows and talk shows. I am not a fan of soap opera. I never quite got the soap opera thing. I had friends who were into the Luke and Laura thing on General Hospital back in the day, and I tried to get into it at the time. I tried to pick up the bug.
Just
never
not
worked.
Your thing.
Never worked. It was like smoking. I tried it, but I could never quite caught on.
Sure. Maybe it's... I loved smoking. Maybe they're connected.
Yeah, it could be. Yes. Something for the Surgeon General to investigate.
Yes.
So my recent... and this is not even really a terribly guilty pleasure because I'm told that it was terrible when it started, although I kind of have forgotten what the first episodes were like. But Cougartown is a thing that I am watching. Cougartown is a thing that I have kind of mainlined like heroin.
Not exactly like heroin, but
yeah, well, something.
Do we need to stage an intervention?
Something. No, but yeah, you know, in fact, the whole storyline where they get fonder and fonder of their wine until they're drinking it out of giant vats, basically, amused me highly.
I agree with you. It's a really good show. It didn't start out as a really good show.
It has become a solid ensemble comedy. It really has.
That's the key, I think. Because, I mean, I still think the weakest link is Courtney Cox and the woman from Scrubs. And it does have a very Scrubs sensibility. But, man, Busy Phillips is amazing.
She is fabulous.
Is fantastic.
She over-relies a little bit on that... What would you call this face I'm making here? That little,
it's a little
thing she does
smirk.
At the end of every line.
Oh, yeah.
Reading. She kind of gives it a little bit.
It's like
a little too much.
Comedy smirk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she's great. Yeah. And the junior Patton Oswalt guy, kid. That guy.
Yes.
My little Patton
the kid
Oswalt.
From
God, it's true.
The kid from Easy A.
Yeah.
The kid from Easy A, exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
It's really solid. It's really funny. I would agree with you. Start with the second season because, yikes.
Yeah.
The first few episodes were poor.
Yeah.
What else have I been mainlining recently? I had quit watching Glee, as we have discussed,
right.
So I dug through a bunch of that. And aside from that one peak, which I mentioned on the podcast a week or two ago, I have turned around on it again.
Yeah.
not a fan anymore.
Not a fan anymore.
Sorry, Glee.
Glenn Weldon.
You know, I read the comic books, comic book type
you do.
Books. The funny books, I do. And,
you do, with the pictures.
I don't consider myself a comic collector because I don't fetishize the physical form of the book. I don't bag or board. I treat them like periodicals. And that's how I see them. I basically just fold over the covers and stuff them under the bed.
Yeah, like a real kid.
Like, yeah, I'm a comics accumulator.
Nice.
There you
put
go.
It that way. I realize that, you know, it's like any other medium. 10% of the stuff is going to be great. 10% is going to be crap. Most of it is going to be somewhere in the middle. So, and I have no illusions about that. But yet, and I realize that, you know, most of this experience of reading these books week in and week out is disposable. With the solid exception that I don't ever dispose of them. Now, why don't I dispose of them? If I really think of them as periodicals, why am I holding on to them? Which is a question I've asked myself. It is a question the guy I share a one-bedroom apartment with has asked once or twice every day for 12 years. And the answer, I think, is it has to do with that these are serial narratives, right? Everybody who becomes addicted to a serial narrative, whether it's soap operas or The Sopranos, feels in the back of their mind like there will come a day when I can just sit down and devour all this in one go.
Sure.
Because, I mean, you know, from month to month, it's tough for me to remember. I read so many comics. It's tough for me to remember what's going on in each one. And I imagine this mythical day when I can just sit. And I know it will never happen. I know it can never happen. Yet it is my Godot. It is my, it is a consummation devoutly to be wished.
It is, come on, Godot and Hamlet in the same breath?
It is
breath?
Snooty reference number three that I can't think of right now.
I feel really bad about General Hospital now.
I've known a few of those consummations.
But I have news for you.
True.
Brothers and sisters, I have news for you. For in the month of May, in the year of our Lord 2000 AD,
oh, good Lord,
this day came. I suffered a debilitating knee injury. How it happened is not important. I was playing football.
No.
I was playing right guard. That's a thing, right? In football? I was playing speed stick. Yes. I was actually playing secret, strong enough for a man, but made. So I was in the dog park with a dog, not this dog that I have now, but a dog before. He was a great dog, lovable dog, 90 pounds of love, half an ounce of brain. Mm-hmm. Not a thinker, this dog, who didn't understand things like the first law of motion, and that when you are barreling at somebody, you can't turn on a dime.
Right.
And his favorite thing at the time was to be chased by every dog in the dog park. So it wasn't just him who clocked me in the knee.
Oh, no.
It was 1,200 pounds of furry death that just hit me.
I don't know why I find this so amusing.
Yes. The other people in the dog park found it hilarious. The knee bent in a way a knee isn't supposed to and caused my orthopedic surgeon to describe what had happened to my knee as it had become crab meat.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Displaying a gift for metaphor that I did not realize the profession fairly is known for.
Bedside manner.
I know.
So for the next 3 months, I lay abed every afternoon for 4 hours while a machine slowly bent and unbent my knee.
Oh, my God.
This would have been hell except for the fact that I had piles and piles of comic books to read all in one go.
And you did.
And I did. And I am here to tell you, just, you think, brothers and sisters, it cannot happen to you, but it can. This day will come when you will be able to just devour this all in one go and pick up things you didn't realize you were missing. So you can hustle it along by standing in the middle of dog park like a chump and just wait.
That
work
is
for
best.
Me. It can happen to you.
And this is the moment, I think, when if Stephen were here, he would point out that the point at which we became friends was partly that he had been kicking around on the internet because he had had surgery.
Mm-hmm.
He was kicking around on the internet, bored to death, and discovered a bunch of stuff that I had written. And that is actually how we came to be friends.
That's great.
Is that he was sitting, sort of surviving this convalescence by reading about The Apprentice and Survivor.
That's right.
See, that is the
like
sad
that.
And sordid truth about how I pass my time when I am sick of it. I way too much Facebook and Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Ugh. Well, that too. From my perspective, when you are housebound, one way to become housebound is if your house needs to be cleaned, which on this July 4th weekend, mine actually did.
Mm.
Ultimately, the only bad part of a very successful tear through cleaning my house was attempting to clean out my freezer and managing to drop from the height of my freezer a large brick of frozen solid pizza dough onto my toe, which turned a lovely shade of purple under the toenail and some other bad things.
Ladies and gentlemen, we bring you PCHH, the hilarious injuries edition.
Yes. Who'd
you go see? Who's your doctor? Is it good? You like it?
It's no mauled in a dog park, but it hurt. But anyway, other than that, it was a very successful 3-day cleaning binge, cleaning and organizing and sorting.
I do have a question. Was it brought on by the Hoarders Marathon, or was it merely coincidental?
It was coincidental to the Hoarders Marathon, but nothing makes you happier than watching Hoarders at the end of a cleaning binge, because you're like, ha, suckers.
Yeah. There's no way to feel more superior.
So do you listen to podcasts while you're doing that? That's what I do.
I was just going to say, I do not listen to podcasts, but I did discover something very important about myself, which is that my tendency is to turn on the TV. If I turn on the TV, since I have several rooms in my house, the problem is when I decide that I want to take a break, That break will automatically be, I'm going to watch the rest of whatever is on.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
if I want to take a break at like 10 after, I'm taking a break for at least 50 minutes. And if something good is coming on after that, all of a sudden you've taken a break that's almost 2 hours long and nothing gets done.
Yeah, that means you could actually never turn on Bravo because it's always a marathon.
Yes, marathon anything.
Correct. So I discovered that I went back to something that I have not been using as much since I got my Kindle, which is audiobooks. Mm-hmm. And I discovered that if I listened to an audiobook instead of watching television, that my breaks became shorter and more flexible. And so I listened on Saturday to basically an entire fairly lengthy romance novel by Jennifer Cruzy, a writer I have talked about before, who wrote a book called Bet Me that I have recommended before. This one was called, it's called Fast Women, but it has nothing to do with that. It's a very funny, kind of sassy book with a mystery story in it. And I liked it a lot, and it was great. And I listened to it like all day. It's like 12 hours long. I listened to like the whole thing and cleaned my house and went all over the place. And then the next day I picked up another one and I read like, I only listened to like half of that one and then half of it yesterday. But the point is, you know, this kind of thing works very well for me if I have to actually rattle around getting stuff done. If I'm actually homebound, if I'm actually like laid up in bed, then yes, I do the same thing the rest of you are describing. I will watch some Real Housewives on demand if I'm behind. But if I'm homebound because I have productivity issues and things expected of me, it's all about the audiobooks because then I'll wander around from place to place and actually accomplish things because I won't sit down and say, I'll just watch this episode of Project Runway. In fact, the reason why yesterday, Monday, was not the most productive day is that there was a Project Runway Season 3 marathon on Style. I did get a little sucked into the Project Runway. So for productivity, it's all about things that are fungible, if you know what I'm saying. Right? But everything else, it's okay if it's in large.
I do think that that audiobook needs to be a romance novel of some kind.
They're perfect.
I have tried to do it one time with Three Musketeers.
No.
And I just fell asleep.
Yeah, if you have to think.
I made
the
bed.
Pay attention.
They are perfect for it.
Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States, for example.
They're perfect for it. And that's what they both were. The one is a Jennifer Cruzy. The other was a Lisa Kleypas, which I haven't quite finished yet.
I find Laura Lippman on audiobook. I can clean anything.
They are great for if you actually have something that you have to do because they're just entertaining enough, but they're not that taxing. So anyway, so that's what I do. I look at being homebound as a productivity issue. Our other big topic we were going to talk about today is one that we are calling our quitters ever winners, and we got talking about the issue of quitting books in the middle, which led us into a discussion of leaving movies in the middle. Obviously, I think everybody's been known to drop a TV show in the middle. But with books, or with theater, or with movies, it's a little bit more complicated. So I'm going to ask Barry, from your standpoint, how do you decide I'm going to dump this book? Do you ever dump a book? Do you have a compulsion to finish the book once you start the book? Do you get past a certain point? What's your theory?
For some reason, it is very unusual that I will drop a book halfway through, unless... Sorry, bosses, it's for work.
In
which case, I will. But it is very unusual, even if the book is terrible. And I've read my share of terrible books. But I do have a technique where if the book is really, really bad, I will really just be flippy, 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 flippy until I get to, okay, well, no, now I know who murdered her.
Yeah. I have done the same thing. Who did murder her, by the way?
Well, it's actually, speaking of TV shows that I... that I have dropped.
Right?
Oh, absolutely.
You did not make it to the end of The Killing?
No, I didn't. No. But then everybody wrote about how terrible the end of The Killing was, and so I went back and I watched the rest of it because I missed it.
It's just perverse.
I know. It
I
was
did
like
the
cutting.
Opposite. I dropped that show after about 4 episodes because I sort of felt like they were treading water.
Literally, rain.
They got to the end. Everybody was like, boy, that was incredibly unsatisfying. And I just thought, go me.
Yeah.
One point for me, because I often drop shows like, you know, I drop like Justified, and everybody's like, you are an idiot. And I'm like, I'm sorry.
I just started that. That's so funny.
No, but I mean, as soon as I realized that The Killing was everything I loved about Twin Peaks, except for everything I loved about
Twin Peaks,
I dropped it like a hot Oregon potato or Seattle potato, whatever the hell. I hung in there for a long time. When we got to the episode, it was almost near the very end, where the producers think that I am interested in the emotional backstory of the detectives who are supposed to be solving the damn case. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, we are coming to the table with two very different sets of criteria.
It's not you, know what it's like? Me. Yeah.
It's like when porn actors talk.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, well, we disagree fundamentally about the nature of the endeavor we have collectively embarked upon. Because,
why are you doing that? You
know, what is this about? I did not come to the table for this.
Right, this is what is so great about, this is the reason, in my opinion, why Law & Order was so successful for so long.
Right.
Every now and then, they would drop some little tiny
little
piece. There was a little tiny piece about, you know, Lenny Briscoe had a daughter with a kind of tragic backstory. Mm-hmm. And then,
and
you know,
car
the
accident. Yeah.
There was the terrible car accident. There's the
which they never really followed up on.
They never did.
That was totally brave.
And that's what they do on that show. You get little tiny, of course, the incredibly famous, is this because I'm a lesbian?
Yes.
Out of nowhere. They never gave you the detective's lives. Yeah. They were like, the detective is here to, like, if it's Jerry Orbach, he's here to, like, make a wisecrack solve the case.
Also, Jerry Orbach would have solved that so much faster.
And
he would have had an umbrella.
Yeah.
Like, I just,
it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. They had umbrellas.
But I am a masochist. Umbrellas.
So you will. You will generally.
I do. The only thing I will in general, you know, like TV shows, I've been known to drop. But one time, I dropped Grey's Anatomy, and this is a true story. My husband can attest to. I wanted to know what happened to all the characters, so I found that I could read an Allure, which is my favorite fashion magazine, at the same time as fast forwarding with subtitles. So it's like you're reading the script.
Absolutely.
Wow.
It's very smart.
So it
That's
was
great.
Really, yeah. I mean, now the Allure hand is used for the baby.
Yeah.
So I can't really do that anymore. But I found that I could get to the end of Grey's Anatomy.
The Allure hand is yours.
I have done the same thing with Wikipedia.
Go
I realized
skim,
to so many people this is such
summaries.
Sacrilege. But if I get to a show and I'm like, I don't want to watch this show if this is where this is going, I'll just go see if that's where it's going.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And if it isn't, then I go, okay, fine. And then I go back and watch it. And there are people who are like, that's absolutely insane. But to me, it works perfectly fine.
Well, with a show like The Killing, to bring it back to The Killing, that thinks it's about mood, thinks it's about establishing mood, you can fast forward through that thing where anytime anybody in any scene is making the Jodie Foster face, the face of I'm right on the verge of tears, you can just zip right through that because they're not going to say anything.
Yeah.
No information. Will be conveyed. It's just about establishing the mood.
It's about mood, right? Well, Trey, you're a theater guy.
I am a theater
guy. And my assumption would be that the ethics of leaving a live performance are very different from, for example, walking out of a movie.
I think they are, and I think they should be. It is a much stronger demonstration of your disapproval to get up and leave a live performance.
And they know you're doing it.
Not least because
they
the people who are making the art can see you.
Right. Don't look at me, Grey's Anatomy. No, McDreamy, no!
Exactly. That said, I have once in my recollection left a performance in the middle. Now, I should stress that I was not reviewing it.
Mm-hmm.
I did not file a review. I was not on assignment. I was there for my own amusement.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a compelling reason, which was that I was on a first date and I wanted it to end well, if you know what I mean. And the and it was very clear that the first date and I were both not enjoying the Patrick Stewart Othello. So we left at intermission.
Wow.
Ooh, you're going to get mail. Not the kind of mail you want to get.
That's right.
Wow.
You're going to get M-A-I-L.
No, it's a much bigger deal. Theater seats tend to be a little closer together than many movie seats. You got to climb over people. There's the whole business about disrupting the show.
Right.
I feel like a play and a performance have to be really seriously bad before you consider that. That said, I tend to be a little bit of a bitter ender. I watched.
Except for that date.
I watched all of Heroes, for instance, being required to do so.
That's a bitter ender.
For my job. Oddly enough, I'm a little more prone than Barry is to drop a book in the middle if it's genuinely painful.
Yeah.
The one exception I have made and will always make is for a book called Angelology, which you may recall my tweeting about recently. And I kept reading it because I had actually paid for it rather than picking it up from the free pile. Here at NPR. And I also decided that I would stick with it so that I could mock it in public on the Twitter.
Yeah.
Right. That can be a good reason.
Yes. I turned my resentment against it into a determination to finish it.
You sublimated it. Good for you. You channeled it healthily. Yes.
That's a big part of my my watching of The Bachelorette.
Yeah. Quitting is a way of life for me. It is. quit while you're ahead is on the Weldon family crest, as far as I'm concerned. It's right there below. You're going to finish those fries? You know, it's pretty much...
Speaking of quitting.
I am totally, totally into... I don't walk out on movies. I never have. I probably never will. Are there any movies that you wish you walked out on?
Yes.
I am not 100% certain, but I will say, without naming it, because I don't think it's fair, but when I was at Silver Docks, I was at one. It was the end of the day. It was somewhat late. I was somewhat tired, and I was not enjoying it. And I definitely thought about it. But here's what happened that was interesting. I did not leave the movie, but I did get up to go to the bathroom. And when I got back, when I came back into the theater, there was an older couple in the process of leaving. And they were sort of stomping out of the movie very righteously. And one of them said to the other one, "Well, that was stupid." And I sort of thought, you know what? It is, but you're at this thing that's supposed to be all about embracing interesting projects that may fail, but they fail interestingly. In honor of you, I'm going to go back and stick out the rest of the movie because I don't really believe in that sort of angry, "Well, that was stupid." And whatever this movie was, it was not stupid. It was, to me, somewhat boring and a little full of itself. I understood what they were going for. I just didn't think it was working at all. Mm-hmm. To me, it was entirely too emphatic of a throwing down of the entire thing and a sort of dismissal of the entire thing.
A chucking of the book across the room.
A chucking of the book across the room. And it motivated me to be like, nope, you know what? I'm going to go back in and I'm going to watch the rest of the movie because that's what I do.
Yeah, I kind of think that one of the things we're talking around here but not quite calling out exactly is that it can be just as much fun to watch and analyze as something goes wrong as it is to appreciate something
that's
going
right. What else are we doing here,
right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Absolutely true. Absolutely
well, the true. Yeah, so the thing you would walk out on, if you were to walk out, is boring, I guess, that because there's not much you can glean from it. If something
it's not
just,
interestingly
right.
bad.
Right, yeah. right. Yeah. There was a movie in 1990 called Mind Walk. You probably haven't heard of it. Mm-hmm. Never do. It was a small film set in Mont-Saint-Michel in France, starring Sam Waterston and John Hurd, two warm, wonderful actors who can bring things to parts. They play a poet and a politician.
Mm.
Warning sign number one. Mm. The tagline for this film was "A film for passionate thinkers."
Ooh.
Warning sign number two. Yeah. And they proceed to walk around Mont-Saint-Michel and have discussions about philosophy. They are met by Liv Ullmann. Heard of her. She's done some acting.
Sure.
She is a scientist who proceeds to lecture them about systems theory and particle physics.
You're making this up.
Not.
In all fairness, if you described My Dinner with Andre to someone who had never seen
or
heard of it.
That's true. That's true.
The thing about that is they find a way in, and they do not make it seem stiff and like a lecture.
Yeah.
This is so overdetermined, so pleased with itself, the smugness that radiates from the screen.
Yeah.
It's one of those rare films that does not get off the starting block. I mean, it basically starts one way and continues that same monotone way for its entire duration. It is painful. And it's the one film I thought, you know what? I should have bolted it like minute five.
Yeah. And I can only remember one time that I was with my parents at a movie that my dad walked out of, and that was Air Force One. Have you ever seen Air Force One?
Oh,
I love
really?
Air Force One.
It has a lot of incredibly gruesome violence and shootings, including one scene, without describing it too much, where basically the killer is sort of counting down to, I'm going to do this horrible, brutal, close-up, awful thing. Typically in a movie like that, something saves the day and it doesn't happen. But in this movie, it happens. And I think my dad got to the point where he was like, why am I watching this? This is just unpleasant. I do remember one time when I was in law school, I was with one of my friends, and we were watching on DVD a movie called Bodies, Rest, and Motion, which had Eric Stoltz and I can't even remember who was in it, but it was one of these kind of people sitting around talking. It's of the same sort of kind of movie as like Walking and Talking and some of those sorts of, it's like, here's young people sitting around talking. And we watched it for, I want to say, like 15 minutes. And we sort of looked at each other and said, are you enjoying this movie? And I was like, no. Are you enjoying it? No. And we took it out and we didn't watch it. And I rarely do that. Mm-hmm. But I did do it in that case. And it was just boring. And it's very possible that I would enjoy it more now.
The thing that's different about movies, I think, and the reason that I more often try to finish books, is that A movie, you can't see if it's going to get better. Whereas a book, mm-hmm. you can flip ahead and be like, oh, I see we are going to lose a main character.
You also are. It's also, you know, so, it's so daunting.
Or in the case of Game of Thrones, we're going to lose everybody.
And to me, with books, with books, though, the thing is, it's so daunting because you're looking the whole time at that big, fat rest of the book.
Yeah.
And it just feels so just heavy in your hand. And I do drop books. And part of the problem with books is that I tend to read several at the same time.
Yeah,
so it's not always a matter of, like, throwing this book across the room. Sometimes it's just, I just never go back to it. And I figure if I don't care enough to go back to it, I'm probably not enjoying it that much. And many of those may eventually be returned to at some point. I have them on my Kindle. It still knows where I left off. I mean, certainly with some books, you got to just power through them and, you know, for the sake of your artistic, you know, enlightenment and enjoyment.
Do you find that if you're reading a book that has sort of already been accepted into the canon, it's one of these classics that you feel, you know, you should read, and you're just really not enjoying it. I feel it's much easier for me to quit a quote-unquote classic of any kind of caliber because, you know, I don't have to like this book.
Everyone else already does.
Everybody else already does.
Yeah, that's true.
In the science fiction genre, there are writers who I just find really clunky, bad prose makers.
Right.
The ideas have been accepted and they're out there in the world.
Yep. Right.
I don't need to put myself through this prose.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm.
Arthur C. Clarke, Ray Bradbury, Isaac Asimov, not for me.
All right, very good. I think we reached some general philosophical conclusions. And speaking of general philosophical conclusions, that brings us to the last segment of our show that we always like to wrap up with, which is what is making you happy this week? I'm going to swing over and start with Barry Hardiman. What is making you happy this week, Barry Hardiman?
Well, besides this cameo appearance
with my that's making us all
friends
happy.
And neighbors. I just realized I sort of shot the moon already. What's the real expression I can use? I don't even know. On this one, which is really the voice. I'm still sort of brimming with warmth that, you know, the fatherly love that Blake Shelton showed for Dia. I still love the sort of Miss Havishamness of Christina Aguilera, but her, like, lovely warm-heartedness toward Bev. I don't think that Adam Levine is as much of a douchebag as I thought he was before. And CeeLo, oh my God, your little arms waving, and the poem that you read are still living in my heart, and to me, you will always be the voice. So that is really, I am the person that fell for that show.
That is very, very awesome. I'm behind you. I only watched a little bit of that show, but I definitely got the warm vibe, and I get all
worth
that.
Worth it for the, when, literally, when Carson Daly, also Carson Daly, by the way, still
associated with something good.
Still around.
Really?
Doing stuff. Kind of keeping the trains running and, like, occasionally giving you a little smirk. But when he asked CeeLo to give a little something to say how he felt at that moment, when he unfolded that tiny crumpled piece of paper and said, I wrote a poem about it. I mean, I really, literally, it was like, it was as though I was pregnant again. I couldn't stop. I was like belling and crying and plotzing. And yeah.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. That's good. All right, Trey Graham, what's making you happy this week?
You all may recall that some months ago, I was being made happy by a thing called potentially shippable product increments.
Yes.
Which was my way of saying that I had taken on a new challenge and I was excited by that. Well, now I am being made happy by the fact that the end of that damn project is in sight and I might just get to go back to doing what I usually do. That is looking like a happy, happy thing. Not just because I'll be done with what it will hopefully be a successful launch, but I will not have to talk about potentially shippable product increments anymore. And I won't have to describe editorial series as products. No offense to project managers and product developers out there. I love you all. I've been one of you now, but it's kind of not my thing, I don't think. I am also being made happy by the fact that I got a screener for Torchwood, the new Torchwood, which is, I think, premiering on the day this podcast drops. So I've watched two of the three episodes on the screener, and I'm delighted to report that it's a little campy and it's kind of fun.
I love those things.
So you guys write in and tell us what you think. I'm still basking in the afterglow of 4th of July happy, which involved not just fireworks on a boat in the Potomac River.
Oh, but, it's a yacht. Last week you said
it
yacht.
Was a yacht. It was a yacht. It's a 60-foot sailing catch. It was fun. But I also got to go to an actual garden party in the Hunt Country of Virginia, and it was ridiculous.
Favorite status updates ever.
There were ladies in hats. There was a lady in a white matelassé cotton sundress. It was lovely. Anyway, men in sherbet colored colored trousers. It was off the hook. I loved it so much.
Once
it made
again,
me feel
Trey
like I was
and Barry are entering their own world right. in which Glenn and I cannot participate.
Really not.
It's important to note that I grew up in the Deep South, so I know that this kind of thing exists. It's just been 20 years since I lived in the Deep South, so I had forgotten that it existed still and that it was this close at hand, so that made me very, very happy. The thing that is making me happiest of all, which, if you follow me on Twitter, you will have known about the garden party, perhaps. If you follow Glenn Weldon on Twitter, you will know that his facade, his thin facade of misanthropy, has been forever shattered. It is a thin tissue of lies.
Why? What are you talking about?
Because, unless I'm much mistaken, you tweeted at one moment that you were a bachelor for the week, mm-hmm. because the other half is on a trip. And then, in the next virtual breath, you tweeted that you were at a party. Now, I am here to charge you, sir, with going to a party without the excuse of my husband made me.
No, these were it wasn't like that. It wasn't like a big party. It was just like a little thing.
It wasn't like friends.
There were some people who came very drunk, who I was not friends with, who wanted to talk. And I was not a fan of that.
Okay,
but no. I still hate people.
Okay.
Very good. But other than hating people, what is making you happy this week?
I probably should have brought this up last week instead of the book that I brought up last week. But if you guys aren't following Peanut Free Mom on Twitter, she's of the same school as your Aunt Diane, but her brand of satire is much closer to the bone, much more subtle. And because it's much more subtle, and Twitter is not a haven for subtlety, it's attention must be paid. She describes herself as life coach, career mom, peanut-free advocate. To that, I would add, the real thing she's going for here is a particular breed of humorless, entitled scold.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yes.
So here's the essence of this Twitter character. Quote, Diet Coke really isn't good for you. Yeah, hi. Ever try just drinking water? Okay? Now, by itself, not particularly funny, because we all know people who tweet exactly like that already. But once you fit it into this whole thing, and there was a while for a while there in the early going, people were wondering whether or not she was real or if this was, you know,
by
fake.
People, Glenn means
we,
us,
usins.
But when she's right on the line, it's really, really entertaining. When she says something like, "I like Seattle's best coffee better than Starbucks, probably because I come from a working class family." Awesome. It's awesome. It's right there. Now,
good.
Sometimes she's been doing this long enough that sometimes she goes a little too broad. Like this, a solid joke, a little too broad. Don't you hate when the landscaper is late? Like a little too much, right? It's not there. You want to be able to think, is this for real?
It needs a little turn.
It needs a little something. Mm-hmm. This is when she's in her zone. I am not a fan of comedians. Now, you could just end there. That's good. I like that sentiment. But here's how she brings it home. I am not a fan of comedians, but Nathan Lane is a hilarious exception.
Wow.
Awesome. That is perfect. Finally, recently she's getting a little meta, because if you don't just follow her, search for her Twitter handle and then see all the people who are at replying to her, because most of them get it, some of them do not, and it is very fun. So she's getting a little meta. I hate those click here to win a free iPad pop-ups. Who is that stupid to reply to something that's obviously fake?
Mm.
See what she's doing there?
Good.
Bringing the meta.
Good.
Bringing the meta.
Yeah.
So it's Peanut Free Mom, no hyphens, spelled just like it sounds. Go to. It's fun.
Very good. And I endorse that, too. I like that, too. Making me happy this week. Well, first of all, a very, very good round of apartment cleaning, including what I used as my topper when I told, actually, Stephen this story, which is put the bath mat through the laundry.
Mm.
And when you put the bath mat through the laundry, you've been adequately serious about your task. Also had some good steaks over the 4th of July.
Nice.
I love a good steak.
Nice.
But the main thing making me happy this week that I'm going to cite, some of you know that I wrote last week about the Oxford comma, which is my favorite comma, and it sometimes is endangered, but not as dead as was reported. And the day after I wrote about the Oxford comma, I tweeted about the fact that I also am against two spaces after a period, which is something that many people feel very strongly about.
Mm-hmm.
Do not email me.
Can we arm wrestle later?
Yes, absolutely. I do not put two spaces after a period. And as I mentioned on Twitter, this was invented because of typewriters, which they were monospace fonts, and they couldn't account for, you know, extra space after a period, which computers can, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Also, in HTML, which is most of what you see online, it ignores double spaces anyway. So there's literally no point, and all it does for editors is put a lot of invisible extra junk code in your piece. So you actually have to strip them out as an editor if people put them in a Word
document. Can I just say one thing that it does do, though, is that it means that you can really punctuate whatever you're saying, like, ba-ba!
You can, but on the internet, nobody will see them anyway. And I write mostly for the internet. So there's anyway, that was my point. And I said, when I talked about it, I said, you know, I don't like, you know, putting two spaces after a period. And then one of my little hashtags was nerd fight. Mm. I think it was fight, fight, nerd fight were the three hashtags after it. And one of the responses that I got on Twitter was from Bill Prady, who is one of the executive producers of The Big Bang Theory. So it was like a totally self-fulfilling hashtag because I said nerd fight and he actually argued with me. And I was like, this is the best possible manifestation of this happening. I really like him. He's a good guy.
I want you to get a writer credit. Mm.
We have traded tweets a handful of times, but I was so incredibly thrilled that he chose to to disagree with me about two spaces after a period when I had just said nerd fight because he's the king of the nerds in the best way, in a very, very loving way. It's a show I like very much, so I should say. It's strictly done unironically. But so that's what's making me happy this week.
Awesome.
And that brings us to the end of our show. As always, you can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Glenn at G-H Weldon. That's W-E-L-D-O-N. You can follow Trey Graham at Trey Graham. That's Trey with an E and Graham like the cracker.
No, it's Graham like the Duke of Montrose.
Exactly. I'm sure that even though he's not here, Stephen would want us to point out that you can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N. And you can follow our lovely guest, Barry Hardiman. Do you tweet, Barry?
I do.
She sort of does. We're going to try to make her.
She tweets, but she also tried to past tense that word the last time she was here. So you want to be careful about that topic.
That's true. So where can they follow you on Twitter?
At B Hardiman.
H-A-R-D-Y-M-O-N. Yep. All right. And you can follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff. That's Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Although...
He looks funny today.
We are being visited this week by our visiting esteemed producer, Jess Gittner. Can they follow you on Twitter, Jess? At?
Jess Gittner.
That's G-I-T-N-E-R. Jess Gittner. And we are incredibly grateful to Jess for stepping in for Mike while he is off, I don't know, washing his hair. What does he have to do that's better than this, I ask you? But we have been fortunate to be visited by Jess this week. And, of course, by Barry. And thank you so much, Barry.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we were so happy to see you and give the baby a hug for all of us.
I will do that. Come and visit me and see him in real person.
I will. No. I absolutely think we should all descend on him in a large clump.
Yeah, no, you should. That'll teach him. Sit on the baby.
We're going to punish your baby by visiting him. At any rate, you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH. Mm-hmm. So thanks to you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for being here. And we will see you back here next week.